Okay, so today I'm going to speak about the title, A Healthy Church Walks in Love. So I'm going to look at what does love look like? Are we healthy? Do we display love? And finally, how can we grow in love? So first of all, what does love look like? Well, 1 John chapter 4 says God is love. So love looks like God. If you know God, you're made in the image of God, and you can't help but love, and your love demonstrates God to others. So what does God's love look like? Well, God went down to hell for 3 days to rescue us. He sacrificed his own life and his son's life for us, not just in his death, but in the way he lived his life. Jesus showed us what love is like in his life and in his death. And he said in John 13, verse 34, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another just as I have loved you. You're also to love one another. And by this will all people know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. Now, Paul and I went to see a film this week on Thursday, and it's a great film. It's called A Man Called Otto. And, you know, God obviously sent us to see this film because it was like a practical demonstration of things I'm going to say to you today, all about how to love somebody, how to demonstrate love to somebody, how to not judge them until you've really heard what's made them like they are. Watch it and learn how to be a good neighbour, but take your tissues. The commandment to love one another isn't the kind of love where we love someone so they will love us back. You see that sometimes in unhealthy relationships. It can be manipulative and needy. It isn't a love that pressures you to love back or to behave in a certain way. It isn't a love that threatens to leave you. It's not controlling. It doesn't pull back or hold itself back from you as a punishment or a way of controlling you or manipulating you. And if you have believed that about God's love, you have believed a lie. God's love is freely given. He doesn't withdraw it, whatever we do and however we behave. There's a song by Stephanie Gretzinger, and the words awaken an awareness of God's love in me, and that he doesn't hold back from me or try to control us. The song goes, I've put some of the words up here, he isn't shy or ashamed. He's proud to be seen with me. His love is a light that all the world can see. It goes, your love is not fractured, it's not a troubled mind. It isn't anxious, it's not the restless kind. It's not passive, it's never disengaged. It's always present, it hangs on every word we say. Love keeps its promises, it keeps its word. It honours what's sacred, because its vows are good. Your love's not broken, it's not insecure. Your love's not selfish, your love is pure. You see, as we understand God's love for us, it helps us to know how to love others, and it flows from his love for us and for others. So, if you were to take the words of that song as an inspiration of how to love others, you would know that we need to be active in showing love, not passive. We need to be present and not disengaged. We need to keep our promises, not be selfish. Putting others first, not ourselves. Let's look at some scripture. 1 Corinthians 13, verse 4 to 7, is probably the most well-known scripture on love. And here it is in the Passion Translation. I'm going to read it to you, but you can follow it along in the on the screen if you prefer. Love is large and incredibly patient. Love is gentle and consistently kind to all. It refuses to be jealous when blessings come to someone else. Love doesn't brag about one's achievements nor inflate its own importance. Love doesn't traffic in shame and disrespect, nor selfishly seek its own honour. Love is not easily irritated or quick to take offence. Love joyfully celebrates honesty and finds no delight in what is wrong. Love is a safe place of shelter, for it never stops believing the best for others. Love never takes failure as defeat, for it never gives up. So let's look at some of that. Love is patience. Love is patient. And sometimes we pray for patience, don't we? And yet we'd have patience if we loved, because love is patient. So maybe instead of praying for patience, we should be praying for more love. More love for the person, because love covers a multitude of sins. Other people's children can be really annoying, can't they? Other people's dogs can be really annoying. But when it's your own, you kind of don't mind. It's more forgiving. I recently turned to Paul and I told him I loved him. And he said to me, "Oh, despite all my faults." And I smiled and I thought, yes, I know your faults, I really do. And yet at that moment, I felt only love for him. And it struck me, that's the meaning of that verse. 1 Peter 4 verse 8 says, love covers a multitude of sins. Love is consistently kind. Consistently. Not just when I'm in a good mood or when you've been nice to me. Kind to all, not just those who like you or those who are like you. It refuses to be jealous when blessing comes to someone else. Maybe that person at work who got that credit for something that you should have got credit for. Love doesn't keep score. We had contact with a young couple recently, and they've recently had a baby, and many of you will know, remember what that's like. You're so tired and you're sleep deprived. Yet when the dad gave the mum time off and she went off for a spa, he then expected the exact amount of time back for his freedom. And she felt she deserved to have the freedom, and therefore she robbed him of the gift that he was giving her by resenting how much she had to do compared to him. Keeping score like this is not God's way. With God, we have a clean slate every day. Love keeps no record of wrongs. Love doesn't throw up past sins every time you have an argument. Love keeps no records of wrongs within the church either, of past ministers. Love is a safe place to shelter. We should be safety nets for people, and we should never give up, because we never stop believing the best for others. We carry hope in our hearts for them. Now, I'm not going to go into the different types of love in the Bible, but you'll have heard of God's love being an agape love. And this type of love is self-giving because he wants to, not because it's looking for some kind of payment. Agape love leans in first. It doesn't hold back. It apologises first. It's honest and it has pure intentions, good intentions for the other's well-being. It's not passive. That's one of the lines that really struck me in that song. Love is not passive. In the passage read to us from Romans 9, it says, never be lazy, but work hard and serve the Lord. That means work at love. Not just doing stuff for God, but work at love. We should be actively seeking to display our love to each other and to the world. And we should seek to grow in our love. So, are we a healthy church? Do we as a church display love? I'm just going to look at a few areas of challenge and a few areas we do well. For instance, I think we have endeavoured in the separation process to do everything in a way that is honourable. I do wonder if we're good at dealing with failure in one another and our church as a whole. If someone or the church makes a mistake, do we reject them? I think some have rejected us as a church when we make mistakes, and some still do. In the Bible, there's a story of Apollos. He was a great teacher, but he wasn't quite teaching the full gospel. And Priscilla and Aquila were sort of head overseers of a group of churches. And they took him aside. They didn't criticise him and rebuke him, but they took him aside and showed him how to be more accurate in his teaching. As a church, we haven't been good at productive feedback and having that modelled to us. But it's part of being in community together. We're all involved in different areas of ministry, and we need to give one another feedback. Whatever area you're involved in, I encourage you to help one another to improve, to be a safe place for one another to grow, to be a safety net for one another. If you see someone doing something well, tell them. If you're thinking complimentary thoughts, speak them out. Love is a safe place, a shelter. We've had our fair share of tragedies and bereavements over the years, and for the most part, I hope we have been a shelter for you. Again, give us feedback where this could improve. These days, there are particular challenges as individuals struggle with sexuality or identity, and I challenge us. Are we always a shelter, a place of love for these ones? Over the years, we have seen pockets of real love, really big pockets, house groups, for instance. That scored really high on our NCD survey that we did last year. House groups, they're a really good, strong pocket of love in the church. But we need to be diligent in darning these pockets, as occasionally, and in fact with use, definitely, they wear thin. I love our group of young people. As I pictured myself doing this talk, I sort of thought of them here, but actually today, a lot of you are over there. But I love that group of young people, of young families, and I love to see their friendship and support to one another. And whenever I speak to a member of the team that leads our cafe church, do you know, independently, without them knowing it, each one of them has commented to me how supportive they are, what a good group they are. At the crossover service, there was a significant number of African youth. Yet at the moment, our provision for youth is an area of challenge for us. I pray that the youth we have can be a strong group and will include that large group of African youths, and that they will grow in love with all the qualities listed in 1 Corinthians. Last week, Charles shared with us that it was Sheila's 80th birthday. He then did as instructed in Romans 12 verse 10. He took delight in honouring Sheila. I didn't know it was her birthday, and yet when he announced it, I heard myself whoop with love for Sheila. Sheila really loves. Her affection is genuine. She works so hard. She's cleaned and repainted a lot of the interior of this building over this last year. She's always ready to help people. She's happy with those who are happy, and she weeps with those who are weeping. I've seen people in this church for years choose to sit next to Sheila during a service when they're going through a hard time, just because she's someone safe to sit next to. When we sang Happy Birthday to Sheila, we honoured her and we show our love for her. If you look at the out part of our vision as a church, the community will know we've got a food bank, we've got Mainly Music, we have Oasis. But it wasn't enough to say, oh, we love our community. They needed to see us doing it. And they need to see us love one another too. That's what attracted me to Christianity. It wasn't what a church did, but the love between the Christians that I saw. That's what attracted me in. So finally, how can we grow in love? Always to start with is God. Steve spoke last week and he spoke on and prayed about us growing in intimacy with God. And in some ways I think we struggle to make ourselves love people more. And yet as you grow in intimacy with God, we'll draw on the nature of God more and our love will grow more. His love will shine through us without us even realising it. When things are going wrong, like in Michelle's prayers, when things are going wrong, when things come against us, like that lady in Ukraine, it's an opportunity to engage in agape love. So the next big heading about how to grow in love, I think, is sacrifice. And under that comes lots of subheadings like hospitality, connection, and socialising. Sacrificial socialising. Not just with those you naturally relax with, although I want you to do it. It should be a priority for you to relax with people that you naturally relax with. Make that a priority. But also, I want you to think about socialising sacrificially. For instance, have all your neighbours round, or invite that new family in church round, or the single people who may be going home to an empty house. Doesn't even have to involve inviting them round to your home if that would be difficult for you. At coffee time, if you're sat with friends at a table, bring up a spare chair. It can be difficult, there's four chairs round the table, four of you sitting round. But just look around and think, well, let's make sure we have a spare chair so that people can feel they can join us. If you're a family of six and it takes up the six chairs, it can be difficult for others to join you. Pull up a spare chair. Just leave it there so that it says to people, we want to meet with you. We want to love you. Come and join us. Walk into coffee time and sometimes be sacrificial about who you sit with. In fact, for some of you, even going through to coffee is sacrificial socialising because you struggle with it. I accept that. Alternatively, sacrificial socialising might involve suggesting you go for a walk with someone or asking them to join you in something that you like doing. There was an older lady in church when we were a young family, and we used to invite her to come out with us on Sunday afternoons when we went out with the kids. She came with us to Balmedy Beach and to a Boyne, and she sat on the grass there and had pizza with us. Edna was a character. We loved her, but it also took effort. Fellowship is a sacrifice that goes beyond convenience. Sacrificial connection. What does that look like? Well, it starts with listening. Listening, not judging. Listening for long enough to understand the other people's why. And being present while you listen. Not looking at your phone or half listening or just waiting for them to finish saying what they've been saying so that you can say the bit that you wanted to say. Be present rather than have the answer. In fact, sometimes it's a sacrifice to listen when you know you haven't got the answer. When you know this is hard and you don't know the right thing to say. But the sacrifice is to be there anyway, to connect anyway. When you struggle with someone, listen long enough to find out what they went through to become like that. Sacrificial connection is saying, this is hard, but I'm staying connected. I don't agree with you, with your life choices, but I'm staying connected. In some of these circumstances, that's where you are the carrier of hope for the best for their lives. So let's be encouragers and truth tellers. It's not always easy to get it right. I said earlier about an area of challenge for us is giving feedback. And my worry is you all start giving feedback and then we release this monster on the church, because really we need teaching on it. But just to say, we'd been learning at house group recently about a feedback sandwich. We'd been learning you give a positive compliment, a point for improvement, and another positive. And the week after we learnt this, I messed up. I just went straight in there with the truth telling, leaving the person reeling. And thankfully, he was courageous and gracious enough to tell me. And we had a really helpful listening and feedback conversation afterwards. One way to grow in love is to surround yourself with an encourager and a truth teller in your circle of friends. They needn't even be what you'd call a friend, but they could have that role in your life. Do stuff together. Who are you doing life with? Who are you sharing your life with? Refuse to get isolated. Choose to do life with the right people, because you're shaped by those who you're surrounding yourself with. Connection doesn't mean you tell something everything they're doing wrong. Sometimes you're just the safety net beneath them, the one who never gives up, or one who, by staying connected, models how to do things differently. In the current sermon series, we've been looking at the early church and what we can learn from them. And in Acts 2, we heard that the believers devoted themselves to fellowship. I'd like to suggest that fellowship isn't the same as friendship. It means to share life. It's more sacrificial, as these aren't necessarily the people you would naturally hang out with. It involves prayer, continually devoting themselves to prayer, not one-off prayers. There's a deep connection between us when we're in fellowship for one another. We've prayed for one another. When I look at you all, I don't see, in fact, I don't see much of what you do in your spare time. I don't see what the inside of your house is like. Annie Coutts has been in this church longer than us, and I love her. I don't hang out with Annie. I've never been in her house. But I knew her son, Gordy. I watched him in the Nativity with Sheila's son, John. We also battled in prayer for John. And I prayed for Gordy throughout his illness, and I wept at his funeral. There's a deep connection, a love and a trust when you're in fellowship together. When you've prayed for one another, and when you know, even without telling them, that they're praying for you in your difficult times. In church, we're a mixed bunch. You're not going to naturally love everyone. If you decide to love someone, even if they don't love you back, you'll get the grace to do it. In church, we're in covenant with one another. To follow God's way together, to seek to be more like Jesus together, to follow the teaching of Scripture. Marriage is a covenant. Cohabiting is not. It says, I will stay until I don't feel in love with you anymore, until it's not in my best interests, regardless of you. In church, we share a covenant with God and with one another. We're not perfect. The elders are not perfect. How perfect do people have to be for you to follow them? No one's perfect. No church is perfect. Courage comes out of knowing we're connected. It gives us courage to make a stand, the fact that we're in covenant. You know in marriage and in church that you are connected to people who love you, Every time I stand up here in front of you, I'm making myself vulnerable to you. But I share what God is saying to me with people who value what God has to say. This year we will get a new minister. I think you've heard me say that before. About a year ago. Are you waiting to judge them? Will you decide whether to not or not to leave the church once you've judged the new minister? Let's not traffic in shame or disrespect. When you hear of something someone did wrong, don't add to it. Don't pass it on. Let's try to be people who are not easily irritated or quick to take offence. Just go to the person concerned. Paul and I have been listening to a series of podcasts called Kylo, K-Y-L-O. It stands for Keep Your Love On. We found it so useful that then we got the audio book, and we'd listen to the audio book when we were on long journeys in the car. And we've encouraged our house group, and we've just finished a course as part of that collection called Loving on Purpose. And we've bought our married couples our married children, a couple's devotion for Christmas, because we benefited so much from the teaching that we wanted them to benefit from it too. It's never too late to improve the relationships you have, or to recognise the way that you did things in your children's lives wasn't the best way. We are seeking to grow in love. A useful statement I recently learnt in our Kylo teaching is to say, when you behave like this, it makes me feel, and what they said is usually it falls into one of those things, it makes me feel hurt, because sometimes you don't know how it makes you feel. So he gives you three tips. It usually makes you feel hurt, scared, or powerless. And I was able to use that in a situation with Paul recently. I'd been feeling a bit irritated at something he'd been doing, and instead of withdrawing a bit and feeling a bit ratty, I shared it with him in this way. I said to him, when you do this, it makes me feel unloved. It makes me feel not important, not interesting, boring. And at first I got a bit of a flippant response back, but I didn't add anything to what I said. I just said it again, and he said, yeah, I hear you. And later he shared something with me, and it was such good information, because the information didn't make me love him more. It didn't make me think, oh yeah, now I love him more. It just gave me information that helped me to adapt my behaviour so that he would feel more loved. And he noticed it and he said to me yesterday, thanks for doing that. Because I can adapt and I can grow in my love. And that's what we want, to grow in our love. Now we're thinking of running a Kylo course this spring rather than the marriage course. Kylo is helping all your relationships, it's not just for marriages. So we feel it's more inclusive, and it's helped us so much. So excuse my shameful advertising, but there you are. Keep your love on. What better way to be a healthy church who walks in love than to keep your love on? Thanks, Malcolm.